morning and welcome to our AA meeting on air on 104.6 Planet FM. My name is Anna, I'm an alcoholic and will be chairing our meeting this morning. Please welcome our speakers today, Mary, Neil and Jono, who will be sharing their experience, strength and hope with you all. Would you all like to help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may share their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, political organization or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And I would like to welcome our first speaker this morning, Mary. Would you like to share with us, Mary?
Yes. Hi, I'm Mary and I'm an alcoholic. I'm here to share my experience, strength and hope with my journey so far through the AA and my sobriety. I'm here because I feel that it's time for me to put across things that have happened on my journey that are so important to the part of how I've got to who I am, who I've learnt to understand myself and become who I am. It is important for me become, I came into AA much later in life. My mother was also in AA, and I guess I have learnt a lot through my journey and understanding my mother's sobriety, of which I just ran away from. That dreadful thing is called fear. I lived with it constantly as an older teenager. When my parents and myself emigrated over from England to New Zealand, and I lived in terrified fear of how sick my mother really was. But I was just a child. I didn't know. I didn't understand. And at that stage in generation, things were pretty much swept under the carpet. Nowadays, life in such is so much more open and so free. But I never really understood. I can now really see the strength that my mother has been given and who she really was now as I've learned to grow in strength myself. I was actually put into a rehabilitation centre by my children because they didn't want their mother to die. And I will be eternally grateful for the fact that they loved me enough to understand that I was going to die. I'd had three major falls in 2 years before they put me into the rehab. And because of that, I realise that I was really, really sick. But we learn that dreadful word denial that didn't seem to be, oh no, I wasn't. I just drank too much. But looking back, I realised it was just a pointless way of self-sabotaging myself to believe whatever I needed to that made me okay to pick up a drink and start drinking towards the end 24/7. Drink in the morning, drink at lunchtime, drink at nighttime. I'm ashamed and disgusted with myself, but I also reflect back now and see that thank to the power that of the God of my understanding through my working and my life with AA has let me believe that I have found something within myself that teaches me how I am good enough now. That it wasn't, it was so much the self-sabotage of I'm not good enough. How I ever got that lost, I don't know. But as I've heard from many shares before in meetings, God's not lost. I am. I'm lost. And he found me. And it is. You know, from that, the song from When Ago, you know, Once I was lost, but now I'm found. And I have found me, and that's what's important. And I have learnt to discover that it's okay to be me, that I'm not perfect. I am a constant work in progress. But it is not without the AA principles in the program, and certainly the 12 steps of AA, that have given me the opportunity to live a life now that, quite frankly, I had no idea was possible. It's just so, so much better, so much more fulfilling, and I am worthy. I'm a worthy person. It's been so hard to believe that. But I live with the fact that God is beside me. My God of my understanding is beside me. Everyone's God is whoever they choose to be it as it is. And I just don't judge anybody anymore. I want to do lots more. I want the more. Typical addict, we want more. We want everything to happen straight away. But I've learned to be content within myself, to realize that this is a lifelong journey. But with the 12 steps, for me particularly, they have meant more to me by the time that I have been able in my journey to learn that I am putting them in my life in some form every day, that they make sense, that it seems to work, it does work, and I keep coming back to meetings. And there are things that I have always said. There are five things that I believe that have helped me through from the start, and that is to suit up, show up, put my bum in a seat, stay connected, and to give back what I have been given. And I have been given an amount of love and warmth. AA loved me back to life. Meetings loved me back to life. The fellowship loved me back to life. And that's where I want to know that in my journey ahead, I will portray that to others, because it is to my own self be true. I am honest, rigorously honest with myself, and that we must, in all honesty, believe in ourselves so we can. When I open my mouth to speak to people, I am talking to myself. I am affirming to people who I am and what they can achieve if they want it. Understand, people have spoken to me and I've not wanted it. I've not wanted it one bit. But with time and the openness and the willingness, I have learned to accept so much now that just would not even entertain the thought to. And I think it's been so important in this journey of mine that I portray that back, that I give back the love that I've been given. But I cannot help anyone or save anyone if they don't want it themselves. I want this, and it needs to be so much more than just a human presence. What it is my spiritual awakening inside of me knows that I am present every day, and every day is the day that I have a choice to make the right decisions that I can do. Through this, though, it's not been easy. There have been times when it's been so painful. And just recently, funnily enough, and I'm coming up for my fourth year in December, and I know we're not supposed to future-proof, but I feel it. I feel the strength inside of me that enables me to get to where I'm going to go. And that is the lifelong journey of sobriety. And I think the important thing is sobriety is not only just stopping drinking. Sobriety has been the learnt to understand everything that we can do for ourselves. And once we are starting to heal the wounds of our past, we are able to look to what we can do for the future. And it is with the greatest respect to all of the rest of everyone in the world or any human being that you do the best you can for yourself. And I must, and I have no regrets to anything that I have done in my lifetime since I've come into this program and into understanding what AA has to have for me. It's so important for me personally to continue the self-belief of the spirituality of this program. It's so important for it to be part and parcel of the person that I am today. I am here because I want to give back what I've been given. I'm in comfort, I'm content with my life, but I am still a work in progress, and sure as eggs, there is a time when I can flip that switch and I will have no control. But so long as I keep doing what I need to do for the principles in the program, the suggested things which I have religiously adhered to, not always willingly. There have been there times when it hasn't been, but there is times when I have seen the gifts that I've been given that benefit who I am and what I've done today and what I have done and will continue to do in my life. So for me personally, it has been a great choice of mine to be here for you this morning to say thank you to everyone in AA and the fellowship, because you are my connection, you are my strength, and with you, because I cannot do this alone, I am very grateful. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much, Mary. Our next speaker is Neil. Would you like to share with us, Neil?
Hi, I'm Neil. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm pleased to be here with you today. I didn't think that I was an alcoholic. It's been quite a journey for me, and I must admit, you know, now I live in quite a good space with my alcoholism. But it's been a life journey to getting here. I grew up in a small town in New Zealand where there was a really drinking culture, and it wasn't frowned upon to drink too much. People did it all the time, certainly on the weekends, etc. So I had in my sort of belief system that as long as you made it to work the next day, and as long as you sort of did the things that you had to do in life, alcohol was fine. But I, you know, growing up in small town, I sort of ended up not fitting. That sort of, I think, scarred me a lot in life. I sort of left with sort of two things, really. One of them is this sort of a real lack of self-belief, low self-esteem. And at the other side of it, I was actually really good at lots of stuff. So I had this sort of grandiosity. And I've heard this quite often with other people who've shared that those sort of, that duality of low self-esteem and grandiosity makes it quite hard to navigate through life with. It served me well in some ways. I did very, very well professionally. And as soon as I could get out of New Zealand, I went overseas for better careers, etc. And I spent most of my sort of adult life in London. And drinking was a slow fuse for me. It was sort of on weekends. It was at parties, but it was always sort of kept in check, if you like. So as long, you know, get up in the morning, I'd go to work, I'd do the things that I needed to do. But when I got the opportunity to drink, it would be lots. And if there was no sort of limits of time or et cetera, then I would drink a lot. But I suppose I was a functional alcoholic. And in a place like London, as long as you sort of show up at in the right place at the right time, looking in the right outfit, you get away with it. You know, your life is sort of in all these different segments, and they don't all come together and have sort of a meeting about you at any stage, thank goodness. And therefore you sort of get away with, having, another life, a life of drunkenness and other stuff. And I managed that, I suppose, until I couldn't. And I used to kind of fool myself with alcohol. I had this, you know, I used to only drink red wine, you know, expensive red wine, and I used to, you know quite a lot about it, etc. And therefore, you know, sort of the Mediterranean diet, one glass of wine a day, etc. It's obviously not bottles that I had, but the it was rubbish. But I sort of, in my mind, I would think that, okay, this isn't bad. One, that lots of other people were drinking lots of wine. And secondly, I sort of did the liver test. So if I, every year or so, I'd get my GP to go and do the liver test. And as long as my liver was fine, it meant that I wasn't drinking too much alcohol. So, you know, those were my, you know, my delusion, if you like. But everything was all right because I was still working. I was doing well. Professionally, things were going just fine. And my health was all right. But sort of looking back, what I failed to realize was that I was bit by bit disconnecting with the world, not growing as a person, and sort of, and I was heading for a fall. And I suppose, you know, coming to the rooms later, I wished in many ways that that fall had happened earlier. But I was so good at keeping the things on the rails, the train on the rails, I suppose, that it took me ages to derail. And I suppose it was COVID that sort of finally did me in. Not the bug itself, but the fact that I could work from home. And I turned from I drink lots at night and go to bed and get up and go to work to drink during the day. And I knew I was drinking too much. I knew that I had to do something about it. I just at that stage didn't want to. And then when it finally got to a point where I had to do something about it, I was really surprised that I couldn't stop. You know, I'd done lots of things in life, and surely it was just willpower. You know, I just needed to knuckle down and stop. And I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't know anything about asking for help. And I kind of tried to white knuckle it and did it myself. And I went through sort of, oh gosh, I got detoxed 5 times. And each time I came back with a resolve that I was going to get things right. I entered AA, about 3.5 years ago. I didn't like it at first. I was suspicious of the banners and all the things that were there. But, I realized quite quickly that actually it was a self-help group and that there was lots of people there who had similar stories to me and similar journeys, and they were living good lives. So I didn't take it on board for a start, but a seed was sown that actually this could be, there's something in this. But I still had more drinking in me. And after 6 months, sorry, 8 months of AA and being sober, I had a massive fall. I ended up in hospital and, I realized I could have died. And I think that was my turning point, that I realized that I had to either make some big changes, or I wasn't going to last another year, I didn't think. So I, against my own self-instinct, I went into a rehab. I wanted to run away the first night. I didn't. But I got what I needed. Okay. And then I got what I needed to get into the AA rooms. And I got that gift of desperation, which meant that I was prepared to listen. I was prepared to change my life. I was prepared to do anything I needed to. And that if I trusted that at some point in the future, I would get a life. And it's quite hard to be in that situation because you don't know that it's going to work and you feel like you're giving up so much in order to get this unknown. And that you have to sort of hold on to that blind faith. But I had no other option. I mean, the option, I tried everything else. I mean, I'd given everything else a good go, and it was going to be this or nothing. And I did go in guns a-blazing. I got a sponsor. I went to my 90 meetings in 90 days. I listened, you know, for the first time, actually, and heard other people. I became less judgmental. I did my daily prayer in the morning, and I did my gratitude list at the end of at night time. And bit by bit, I started to settle. And, you know, life started to get good. And the chaos that I'd been managing for the last, I don't know, 20-odd years, I didn't have to manage anymore. And actually, so what I've got is kind of not the life of my dreams, but it's a good life. It's not the life I was expecting, but it's a life worth living. I'm very thankful that there was, an organization, a self-help organization of somewhere for me to go. Because without that, I think I would have, well, I tried to do it by myself and I didn't. I still have work to do. I still find that I guess the bit that happens to me that I have to watch out for is that my I'll get stuck in my head, and once you get stuck in your head, well, like for me, I start trying to solve the world's problems and mind and everything in it, and you know, things can circulate around and amplify, and the relationship that has to alcoholism is that it sort of leads to sort of a level of anxiety and I suppose in some cases depression, and alcohol in previously has been a solution. All right, so part of me doing all these things is keeping myself balanced and keeping myself in check, because by doing so I'm protecting myself against going back to alcoholism. I mean, I'm pretty confident now that if I do all these things, I can kick that can down the road. I do know that there is no cure, and the hope I've got really moving forward is to make sure that I just keep myself on track. But I've got the tools now, and I'm feeling quite confident about that. And I'm happy with where I am in the world. I kind of wish I'd got there sooner, but then, you know, you get where you get when you get there. Anyway, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Neil. And our last speaker today is Jono. Would you like to share with us, Jono?
Thanks, Anna. Hi, my name is Jono. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Tamaki Sunday. I'll go back to the beginning. I grew up in Africa, and when I first started drinking at probably age 13 or 14, I loved alcohol. Alcohol was great. Alcohol was fun. Alcohol gave me confidence. My younger years, I thought I could control alcohol. I was, kind of when I left school at 16, alcohol was my friend. But I did not, I didn't think I was an alcoholic, you know. I could, go and have benders on Friday nights, and then not touch another drink for a week or so. And that's kind of how my, younger days started off. It was fun. Yeah, it was great fun. You know, all my friends drank. In fact, everybody drank. We all drank and smoked. It was kind of the thing we did. We didn't really have anything else to do in Africa. And then I moved to London. When I got to London, I was introduced to other substances. And I found out very quickly that doing other substances meant I could actually drink more without feeling terrible the next day. And it was kind of like that went on for quite a few years. I lived in London for 14 years. I had a decent job. I was motivated. My life seemed pretty good. I thought so anyway. The drinking just kind of just escalated. It just got more and more and more. And, you know, from weekend drinking, my drinking soon turned to kind of 4-day benders. I still managed to get up for work in the mornings, albeit with a major hangover. And I just thought this was just part of life. Everybody was doing it. But, you know, one thing I've realized now from back in the day was that when everybody else stopped drinking, I always had to have one more or two more or three more. You know, everyone had gone home and I went home and thought, I need to have another drink. You know, my night's not over yet. And I would do that. And that kind of just carried on for, you know, as long as we were. And, you know, during my time in London, I met my now ex-wife. And, you know, things were great. She's from Australia. She moved to London to be with me, you know, and... You know, when she moved over to London, the drinking kind of escalated. I thought it was going to go the other way, and it just seemed to get worse and worse. But I was still able to cope and control it, and I thought everything was fine. And, you know, I think after we got married, while we were living in London, we got married here in New Zealand. It was wonderful. And, you know, after about 4 years of being married, we decided that we should probably leave London, and we decided to move over here to New Zealand. And I thought, some might call this a geographical, I thought moving to New Zealand, I'm going to stop drinking, you know, I'm going to start a family, buy a house, do the things that adults do and not have to drink with it. And I've figured out now, you know, moving to New Zealand was a blessing in a way, but I didn't have any support in New Zealand. I've got no family here. I didn't have any friends here. I moved here to start a family and start a new family, and, you know, kind of, and we did, you know, my first year in New Zealand was great. You know, I got a job really quickly. It's a pretty decent job. I've been there 7 years now. But yeah, that first year was pretty good. You know, we got pregnant in the first year. We bought a house. You know, all the things that I wanted to do happened really, very quickly. And I thought, yes, I've done it. However, the drinking had got way out of control by this point. So much so that when I was drinking, I could not stop. I was drinking all day, and I was hiding my drinks. It got so bad that I knew if I stopped drinking, I knew the consequences of stopping drinking was, you know, kind of the DTs, the shakes, just the fear, the, can't think of the word. It was really bad. There was instances where I could barely walk. My son was 2 years old and I couldn't pick him up for fear of dropping him. Because of the alcohol. You know, we went to the doctor. I was convinced it wasn't the alcohol. My wife, I think, knew it was alcohol. I knew it really deep down. I knew it was, but the insanity of it all was we went to the doctor and I convinced the doctor and my wife that it wasn't from the drinking, and he ended up sending me to a neurologist. I had an MRI and everything, and you know, and I just continued to say that it wasn't to do with alcohol. I mean, that's alcoholism for you. That is pure insanity right there. And anyway, it got so bad that you know, my wife decided one day that I was gonna leave the house, and I was gonna go stay with a friend and sort myself out. My son was just over two and a half by now, and I said, okay, I need to do this because I need to get well. I went and stayed with a friend. I went to my first AA meeting, shaking. I was shaking so badly, someone gave me a cup of tea which I couldn't drink because I couldn't pick it up. And I thought, you know, I'm in the right place. And you know, after that AA meeting, I thought, yes, this is where I need to be. And I found myself a sponsor. And I started doing the program. And then after about 7 months, I got cocky. And I thought I could control this disease. My good friend of ours came over to New Zealand, and I thought, you know what? I've got to have a drink. I'm sure I can have one drink and we'll be able to, you know, party like we used to back in the UK. And that insanity of the first drink, thinking that I could control it, well, it didn't take long before I was back to drinking all day again and hiding my drinks, lying to my wife. You know, I'm so grateful I managed to keep